Hello, and welcome to the 8th episode of Season 7 of the Dark Money Files, in which we shine a light into a murky world. I am Ray Blake, and with me is my co-host, friend, and business partner, Graham Barrow. Hello, Graham.
Hello, Ray.
We are going Trojan this week then, Graham.
Trojan? What, horses and Greeks and that sort of thing?
Well, more of an iron horse, this one.
So is this the sting operation, Ray? Variously, I think, called Operation Trojan Shield, Operation Ironside, or the Anom sting?
Yep, that's the one. Presumably to differentiate it, at least among historians, from the original Operation Ironside.
Oh, it wasn't the first one then?
Oh no, there was an Operation Ironside deployed by the Allies in 1944 as part of the diversionary tactics designed to facilitate the D-Day landings by diverting the Germans' attentions elsewhere in France.
Ah, that wasn't quite... entirely successful then, that one?
Well, no. Certainly not as successful as its more recent incarnation.
Would you like to tell us a bit more about that then?
Graham, I'd love to. Back in 2018, the FBI took down a Canadian company called Phantom Secure, which provided modified secure mobile phones which were equipped with a so-called kill switch, which enabled the owner to remotely wipe the phone. Apparently, the main users of this phone were drug traffickers and other criminal organisations.
Oh, so its removal from the market left something of an opportunity for someone else to step in.
Yes, and according to the reports, it coincided with the prosecution of someone with extensive knowledge of building such secure devices, who offered to work with the FBI in order to secure a more lenient sentence for himself.
Well, that was very handy all round then. Do we know who it was, this person?
Technically, no. But many of the reports refer to the fact that the source was recruited shortly after the arrest of Vincent Ramos, the former CEO of Phantom Secure.
Those reports are in a kind of nudge, nudge, wink, wink kind of way, are they?
Well, that's how I interpret it, certainly. Either way, not only did this anonymous source help develop the initial device, he, or I suppose she, also seeded it into three former distributors of Phantom Secure, oddly enough.
Fancy that. So presumably that the criminals had already established a degree of trust with these distributors, which would make them more accepting of this replacement unit.
Well, highly likely. Again, according to reports, an unnamed third country agreed to act as interceptor for these communications, which were then routed back to the FBI. They came up with the name Trojan Shield, while the Australian Federal Police, who were co-initiators of the sting, called it Ironside.
Okay, but why Australia?
A very good question, Graham. Two reasons. One is that apparently the initial idea cropped up in a conversation over a beer between US and Australian intelligence operatives.
Well, fancy that.
Well, indeed. And the second is Australia is where the sting was beta tested, as it were.
Ah, got it. So, Ray, how did the app actually work?
Well, it ran on a phone which had all other functions disabled, so all it could be used for was secure messaging.
Okay, so how did the FBI and the AFP, the Australian Federal Police, get access to these messages then, if they were secure?
Well, there's a difference between secure and secret, isn't there?
True.
And that's the clever bit, Graham. The messages were routed through a supposedly secure server located in an unnamed third country, which obtained a court order allowing it, while the messages were transiting the server, to copy them to another server under the control of the FBI, who were in possession of a private key which allowed decryption.
Ah, so the sender and the receiver were never aware of that third party reading the messages.
Exactly.
And what was, Ray, the result of this beta testing?
50 devices were distributed throughout Australia from October 2018, and every single one was used by criminal networks, mostly organised criminal gangs, or OCGs as they tend to be known these days.
Every single one?
Yes. The users were so pleased with their clever little devices that its reputation started spreading via word of mouth. And more than one criminal decided there was a lucrative little market to be had by selling them to other criminals. Because each handset sells for quite a lot of money. And reading between the lines, it seems that owning one was a bit of a status symbol. It showed you were a serious player.
I bet those people responsible for distributing them are very popular at the moment.
I'd be willing to bet they're very much in hiding at the moment, Graham.
I think you're right, right. Yeah. So how did it play out from there?
About a year later, in October 2019, there were several hundred users. But by the time of the sting operation being instituted, there were around 11,800 installations of Anom, of which more than 9,000 were in active use.
That is a lot of criminal activity.
According to Europol, they tracked more than 27 million messages emanating from more than 100 countries.
That also is a lot of data, Ray. I suspect they probably had some clever artificial intelligence at work in the background sorting out the meaningful from the garbage.
Well, you'd think so, wouldn't you? It also tells us something very interesting about the way criminal networks operate, Graham.
Tell me more, Ray.
Think about it. More than 100 countries, more than 9,000 active users. No advertising on the TV or the usual internet sites. It shows us just how interconnected these disparate crime groups are and how effectively they communicate with each other.
You know, you're right, Ray. To effectively spread around the world in not much more than a year is compelling evidence for the existence of a global, albeit informal, network of criminal gangs. And of course, the money launderers who provide their services to them. We've often said the criminals are much better at doing the team thing than the good guys.
We have, yeah. Because all these different criminals still need to be able to clean up their money, so they'll need to access money laundering networks.
Exactly.
But for the people working in law enforcement, it must have thrown up all sorts of ethical and moral dilemmas, Graham.
Yeah, Master Rafe, what do you do, for example, if you discover a plot to murder someone?
I'm not in the intelligence services. I don't think I qualify. But I imagine that you use the information gleaned from the app to direct your attention to external sources, which can validate the potential crime, and then you set up some means to, well, discover the plot by those means without giving away the real source.
Yeah. So you mean, for example, say a cop pulling a car over for some minor traffic offence, only to discover a firearm or some other incriminating evidence as a result?
Yes, and knowing exactly which car to pull over when, that's exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah.
It would be very difficult to allow a murder to go ahead unchallenged, but given the sheer volume of intelligence coming from the app, they wouldn't have wanted to give the game away for the sake of a single crime, even a quite serious one.
Yeah, so you take items of intelligence gleaned from these encrypted chats and then work out ways of discovering the underlying crimes without revealing what your original source was.
Exactly, and I think they did a similar thing during wartime at Bletchley Park, didn't they?
I think you're absolutely right.
So as not to blow the gaff that they could actually decrypt the Enigma codes.
Exactly. They didn't want to kill that goose that was laying golden eggs now, did they?
No, they absolutely didn't.
So that kind of makes you wonder why they chose now, or a few days ago, to break cover.
Well, I guess they had to at some time. And again, if you care to believe what you read, at least one posting had already appeared online declaring the app to be a scam.
So maybe they decided to step in while they were still in full control?
Well, I think that's possible before the criminals had a chance to put something more effective in place. But it's also reported that the court warrant issued in the unnamed third country allowing the copying of the messages expired on the 7th of June, and the coordinated police raids actually happened across the world on the 8th of June.
Okay, that kind of makes sense. So what was the net result of all those coordinated police raids?
So far, there have been more than 800 arrests in 16 different countries. Evidence seized includes 8 tonnes of cocaine, 22 tonnes of cannabis and cannabis resin, 6 tonnes of synthetic drug precursors, and 2 tonnes of synthetic drugs.
Wow.
Oh, yeah, no, hang on, I haven't finished yet.
Oh.
250 guns, 55 luxury cars, more than $48 million in various currencies and cryptocurrencies. More than 9,000 police officers in 18 countries in a period spanning more than 3 years were involved in the operation.
And apparently not a single leak.
Well, so it would appear.
At the beginning of that rather impressive list of results, by the way, Ray, you said so far. So what do you mean by that?
Well, I think it's entirely possible that other criminal gangs have been identified but weren't in a place where they could be seized as part of this one-time operation. But that doesn't mean they won't face arrest at some point in the future.
Indeed. And I wonder how many of those arrested already will be willing to trade information for a more lenient sentence.
It seems like something I've heard happening before. I'm sure that avenue is being thoroughly explored right now as well.
I think you're right, Ray. Now, those of us who follow these things will be wondering how this fits in with the other recent breakthrough in respect of the EncroChat app.
Quite a different approach with that. It was less of a honeypot sting operation, more of a very successful hack into an existing criminal encrypted chat network.
So it was more like a WhatsApp for criminals type affair.
It wasn't specifically developed for criminals, though, Graham. Allegedly, it was originally made available to celebrities who wanted to be able to conduct private conversations online, but it did have a kill switch.
And like all things that are suitable, it does not take long anyway for the criminal fraternity to co-opt anything which could be useful for their own ends.
Exactly. However, much like Anom, it tended to be used on handsets where much of the usual functionality was disabled, often through the purchase of specially tailored hardware where the GPS and the camera and the microphone were removed.
You see, it reads at times, I'm going to be honest, like some of the kit that Q would have provided to James Bond. Apparently, there were two ways of turning some of these phones on. Just pressing the power button would boot the phone into a dummy Android home screen, whereas pressing the power and the volume button would boot it into the secret chat environment.
Yeah, very much low budget postmodern Q from about Skyfall era onwards. Yeah. And of course it did also have this panic button or kill switch which would erase the entire contents of the phone on demand.
And once again, according to reports, the phone was very popular with the criminal fraternity, particularly in Europe. And they would change hands for upwards of $1,000, $1,500 for a 6-month contract.
Do we know how they managed to gain access to the messages?
Well, apparently, from the reporting, the French gendarmerie first identified the app back in 2017, and then working with the UK's NCA and Dutch police, eventually managed to find a way in, allegedly through the planting of some sort of tool on the French server which handled the messages. I mean, tool in a kind of technological sense, which allowed law enforcement to read the messages and gain lock screen passwords before they were ever sent.
Yes, I know of a few tools. And it seems that for a period of about 2.5 months, Graham, law enforcement all around Europe was able to read messages between criminal groups in near real time.
Yes, one police officer described it as being like sitting at the table whilst criminals chatted amongst themselves.
But ultimately, EncroChat realised it had been compromised and sent out a message to its entire network, telling them to wipe and dispose of their phones.
Bit of a giveaway, and rather late in the day, I fear.
Yes, and once again, a huge number of criminals, criminal property, cash, drugs and so on, were recovered, and a great swathe of people arrested. But the interesting point here is that when the authorities intervened and effectively shut down EncroChat, it boosted ANOM sales.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, and then it happened again when US authorities closed down another rival, Sky Global, in March this year. At that point, active ANOM users soared from 3,000 to 9,000.
So hold on. So by closing down a network that they couldn't control, the FBI effectively kettled its users into a network that they could.
Yeah, that's about the size of it. Win-win for the good guys.
Fantastic. And while it is fantastic to celebrate these specific success stories, I wonder whether there isn't something of a psychological victory here as well.
Do you want to elaborate?
Well, yes. You see, there's an old proverb. It's not one that's generally known.
Okay.
The person who burns his mouth on hot soup will in future tend to blow on his yogurt.
Oh, that sounds a bit Karate Kid.
Well, yeah, maybe. But it's a slightly clumsy way of saying that once you've been caught through using one specific app, you will treat all similar acts with much greater suspicion in future.
Gotcha. So one way of fighting back against the use of encryption is not by providing a backdoor for governments to snoop on everyone, which is kind of almost universally unpopular whenever it's mooted, but by targeting the criminals specifically and causing them to be more circumspect when using encrypted apps in the future.
Yes, it is always a difficult trade-off between personal privacy and the protection of the public. But it's useful, I think, Ray, to be given a reminder that there is more than one way of addressing the problem, and it doesn't always mean making us all a bit more insecure or removing a bit more of our precious privacy.
I mean, that's also a very interesting conversation, Graham, and maybe one we could pick up in a future episode.
I agree, Ray, but looking a bit nearer to home, do you think it would be time and a good idea to do an episode on money laundering through non-banking financial institutions?
You mean like lenders, insurers and so on?
Yes.
Well, I think that's a great idea. I'm already looking forward to it.